Hello and welcome in to another episode of Podcast 63, Season 2, Episode 12. We've had two games since the last episode. We had a game at Ball State and then a home game against Quincy. So this week we're going to be talking about the games. And Lou, how are you feeling? Are you doing good? Wait, you're not Lou. Who are you? Well, we'll find out. So you make sure to stay tuned. Don't turn that dial. And go Blurs. Well, now that everyone has been properly warned and I'm sure they're sitting on the edge of their seats waiting, why don't you introduce yourself, give us your name, why you think you are a good person to talk about Blurs basketball and also the city of Chicago.
Oh, hi. My name is Jeff. I think I'm a good person to talk about Blurs basketball because I've attended more games than Lou this year.
Oh my god, the shade is already full blast. Lou, if you're listening, you better watch out. Your job's on the line. But yeah, so why Chicago? Like, I know why, you know, that you're from Chicago, but why don't you tell us where you came from and how long you've been living in Chicago and
so
what
you
do for a living.
So I've been living in Chicago for 20 years. I'm a producer for WBBM News Radio here in Chicago. And I'm a fairly recent convert to Loyola basketball. Sister Jean was my gateway drug, I think, to Blurs basketball.
I think as many of us.
Indeed.
Have been. Yes.
So I'm happy to be here and pleased to have been invited.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, we're gonna need your expertise today.
Okay.
So, listeners, it's not really going to be a usual episode. We'll reschedule our or resume our typical Lou and Buck stuff starting later in the week content. But we're going to talk. We just watched the game against Quincy, as well as we're going to talk a little bit about the city of Chicago, because Jeff is an expert when it comes to the city of Chicago. Namely, this past week, there has been a lot of news regarding DePaul basketball, DePaul men's basketball. For those who don't know, they started 9-0. They beat Texas Tech at home, I believe, at the Wintrust Arena, I think on Wednesday or Tuesday, a little bit earlier in the week. So they moved to 9-0. They're one of like 14 or 15 teams left in the country without a loss. In addition to that, they're receiving a lot of news coverage. I wanted to get your opinion on that. The first question is, you know, you do daily news. So what has this hot start for DePaul looked like as far as like the news coverage cycle goes? Because they are getting more coverage than a lot of the other college basketball teams right now.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think for Chicago media, because, well, two things are at work here. So the first thing is that DePaul has kind of a history of being kind of a storied basketball school, going back to Ray Meyer, and it's kind of the legacy of DePaul, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's what a lot of people in decision-making positions in Chicago newsrooms and in sports departments are thinking, like, oh, this is, you know, they're finally catching fire again. Maybe this is a return to the golden years of DePaul basketball. So that's part of what's happening. The other thing is, people love comeback stories, and DePaul men's basketball has been a tire fire for so long.
Yes, it has.
And you and I were just talking about this the other day. The Tribune had a whole essay on, you know, the athletic director and the head basketball coach staying put, and mm-hmm. no changes being made, and the kind of conventional wisdom being, oh my gosh, what are they doing? This place has been kind of a mess for so long. And now the story is, oh my gosh, they haven't lost a basketball game yet. That's crazy. Especially after the city of Chicago spent or gave up hundreds of millions of dollars in tax incentives to build them a new basketball facility, mm-hmm. which is, of course, miles from their campus.
And not well attended up until this most previous game.
Well, that's correct. And the whole point behind that arena in my humble opinion, was for the city to put other venues or other events in there because it's very close to McCormick Place, which is the big convention center in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's the home of DePaul men's basketball, but it's also, I think, the home of other things. And in fact, there have been prize fights in that facility and other sporting events, things that bring in revenue for the city. So, I mean, it's not just a single-minded thing. And I think that's a lot of what is driving the visibility for DePaul men's basketball. Mm-hmm. The history of the program, the fact that it's been such a dumpster fire over the last 10 years and all of a sudden it's not. And they now play in this really expensive, very nice, state-of-the-art facility that the city of Chicago helped pay for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's basically what you're looking at.
I guess like my question is, how come it, I mean, and you probably have already answered it, but why were we waiting so long for Chicago sports media to catch on to the Loyola story going back before the Final Four? I mean, we started the season very strong. We beat a number five ranked team in Florida. We came back. I think we had only had two losses or three losses going into the conference schedule. Went 15-3 in conference, and still, like, no one followed along until really the conference championship of Arch Madness. And then, you know, there were some stories. There were stories about Loyola going to the tournament, who they were going to play. And from then on, yeah, it was followed very well. But I guess my question was, why did it take so long for Chicago sports media to catch onto a Cinderella story, onto this little Loyola, who it was a great story. You had, you know, Sister Jean still hadn't blown up to that point. But you had Sister Jean, you had this team, you had, you would think every of the pieces there for such a great Chicago Chicago story. So what do you think the differences are between this DePaul story, besides the history, and Loyola, Loyola's story going back 2 years ago?
I think there's a couple of things at work here. First of all, and this sounds so lame and provincial, but I think there's a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. Loyola's in Rogers Park, DePaul's in Lincoln Park.
Mm-hmm.
That far north doesn't seem like a lot when you're talking about the city of Chicago, but in terms of media focus, it's everything. Because a lot of people who work in Chicago media, at least in like television stations and that kind of thing, they all live in Lincoln Park. They all live on the north side. Nobody gets much past like the Sheridan stop on the Red Line. So I think if it's out of sight, then it isn't being thought about all that often. I will say that in our newsroom at that time in the Final Four run-up, we started to take notice when after the Florida win.
Okay.
At the I guess it was a tournament, right?
It was an away game. It was away at Florida, okay. Yeah.
I think when the Florida win happened, we started having conversations in our newsroom about, oh, we need to keep an eye on Loyola. This could be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always a little surprised that the mystique of Sister Jean didn't catch on as quickly as I thought it would have. I pitched a Sister Jean story, I think when they were leading up to Arch Madness, I think I pitched a Sister Jean story for the news side. We're not talking about the sports segments, but in the news side.
Mm-hmm.
And we assigned it to our reporter, who actually is a Loyola graduate, and he had never heard of Sister Jean.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
So he must have just bunkered down in his dorm room.
Well, it was also, I think he graduated in like the 1920s or something like that.
Well, Sister Jean was 53 at that time.
That's true. So there was a little bit of, I think newsrooms caught on eventually, but I think it was, you know, because it was such a great story. And in fact, here's a fun fact. So in the Final Four coverage, the in-studio hosts had like a Sister Jean bobblehead that they had on set. Our producer gave them that. Our producer, our morning producer, who is a Loyola grad, had a Sister Jean bobblehead head and shipped it to New York so they could use it on the set in their coverage.
Yeah,
He did get it back and it was still in one piece.
Good.
So I think, and it's kind of a lame answer, but I think a lot of it just has to do with Loyola's way up in Rogers Park, and you don't see the campus every day when you're trying to get to work on the L or whatever. And
still the most beautiful campus in Chicago. Still the only school in Chicago with a campus. I'm talking to you, DePaul. You have no campus. And Evanston doesn't count. So, I mean, it's a shame, really, because I think anyone who Anyone who comes up for a basketball game or any other reason, you know, maybe they're coming up for our top 100 business school or our pre-med program that's incredible, or, you know, our men's and women's soccer teams who both won and made it to the NCAA tournament. You know, any reason, I feel it's a good reason to come up here and then you'll fall in love.
How are you not sponsored by Loyola?
This podcast is sponsored by Loyola University Chicago. Onward, LU. No, I do think that it's a good answer. I get it. I get that Rogers Park is literally the last neighborhood before you get to Evanston. Like, it's the northernmost town or neighborhood. I don't know why I keep saying town. Neighborhood in Chicago. So I understand that it's a little bit out of the way. It's a bummer, though. I mean, I think you would probably agree. It's a little bit of a bummer that we don't get the same news coverage. I feel like, especially considering, which is a segue into my next question, that Loyola is doing it the right way because we've never had any infractions, we've never had any NCAA violations, and on the other hand, DePaul has, especially just this past year. I'm just looking at an article from Sports Illustrated by Emily Karen saying DePaul's Lato received a 3-game suspension, and their program was placed on probation just this past year for failing to promote an atmosphere of compliance and failing to prevent violations from occurring in his program. So not necessarily the head coach was not committing them himself, but I'm pretty sure, I didn't read too much into this, but I think other violations were occurring within his program, specifically some of his assistant coaches.
Yes, that's correct.
And offering, I think, funds or money or some sort of financial advice to students or prospective players for the team. I don't know if you're familiar. I know I'm kind of throwing this at you a little bit. But what do you think that means for the DePaul program? Like, these wins could eventually become vacated. Is anyone talking about that still, or do you think the focus is now on DePaul is 9-0?
Oh, I think it's very much that. I think the focus is DePaul is 9-0.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, another reason I think why DePaul gets so much attention, and again, this feels like kind of a cop-out answer, is because DePaul is in the conversation with all these other Big East schools.
Right.
You know, the conference is a far higher profile conference than is the Missouri Valley Conference. And I think for sports departments, I think that matters. I'm not a sports guy, but I think that has a lot to do with it, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I think the focus will be on the wins and losses until such time as the NCAA makes a recommendation about specific wins and losses and specific conduct. And then I think you'll start to see stories about the program and about that kind of thing. But the athletic director threw water on a lot of that at the very beginning of the season with the conference call with the head coach, in which the school said, "We're behind this guy. We think he's turned it around. We think it's, you know," and they've been at least outwardly, at least in public, supportive of the program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to take a little bit of a time travel, a little trip back in time to 2018 when Loyola was in the Final Four, was making their tournament run. I quite often like to watch their highlight videos from, you know, the season, and I'm sitting by myself in my room watching and crying and screaming along with it. But that's not the point of this. The point is, we obviously made a huge impact on the city of Chicago, on the country. And I'm curious as to the first thing that comes to mind when I'm thinking about similar news stories or Chicago sports stories that have such a big gravitas or following. The first thing that comes to my mind immediately is the Cubs winning the World Series, right? The Cubs winning the World Series is way bigger than Loyola basketball, unless they won the national championship. What other stories do you think come even close to the impact that Loyola's Final Four run had on Chicago as a whole? And I think it's kind of limiting because there's very few things that can kind of bring together a city, and mostly it is sports, which is kind of a shame because there are so many other great things in the world. But I'm just curious if you have any sort of like relate, if you could relate Loyola's Final Four run to anything else that has happened in Chicago sports history while you've been here covering news. Because I think for me, I sometimes have a little bit of a skewed perspective and a bias on it. So I'm just interested in your news experience, what you would think is comparable to the Loyola Final Four run.
That's a good question. I think about a lot of the, and we're talking about sports stories.
I mean, anything
specifically.
Really, but I think that my point was that I think there are very few things that kind of bring a city together. Mm-hmm. Unlike or anything other than sports, but if you can think of something other than sports, that's even better. But
I think the it was really great to see so much support for the team during the Final Four run. In terms of what it compares to, or where I would put it on kind of the continuum, mm-hmm. I think is what you're asking.
Yeah,
I think it's right up there with one of the Hawks Stanley Cup championships, mm-hmm. I think. And I was not here for the whole Jordan era, but, everybody tells me all of the Bulls championships were huge deals, mm-hmm. here.
I remember the one in 96. It was a little bit after I was born.
I was going to say, one of your first memories, I think, was watching.
Yeah, I think so. It was a good year.
Yeah. But I, you know, it's hard to compare them because with colleges, you often get these other kind of weird loyalties sometimes. Mm-hmm. You point out that sports is the one thing that can help bring people together. And it is certainly, you know, as universal an appeal as there can be, probably. Mm-hmm. But I certainly think it would compare with one of the Hawks Stanley Cup wins, mm-hmm. the most recent ones anyway, in sort of the Quenneville era.
Right.
It was, it certainly brought a lot of attention to the city, a lot of good attention to the city, mm-hmm. And a lot of good attention to a good quality school. That you point out correctly doesn't get a lot of attention.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think, especially for me, one of the things I'm most proud of is the fact that there haven't been any violations. Porter seems like a guy who does it the right way, whatever that way might be. And he rightfully got a lot of attention after the Final Four run. Namely, he was up for the job at St. John's.
Right.
Is also a Big East school.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any more maybe non-sports stories that you can compare it to? If not, that's okay. I'm just like trying to put it in perspective.
You know, it's hard to compare a sports story with a non-sports story. The emotional appeal can often be very different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think about the stories that I've found have had a particular emotional hook for people, and the, you know, one of the things I think about, and this is, I mean, it's difficult to compare, would have been election night 2008.
Okay,
Would have been the election of Barack Obama and the scene in Grant Park that night, mm-hmm. and the mood in the city that evening. I remember it was an extremely warm November.
Mm-hmm.
And I was driving home and I had the windows were open on my car and there were people yelling and cheering. I could hear as I drove through the loop that night. And I don't know that it rises to that level, but that's certainly the kind of emotion that I felt in the city. There was so much goodwill around the team and around the people. And I think Sister Jean's a big part of that.
Right.
I think Porter's a big part of that. Porter is certainly seen in the city. I mean, the guys, you know, I think you guys call him the King of Rogers Park.
We have in the past. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's, you know, has gotten so much great attention and positive attention and has really done an excellent job of marketing himself as being that guy. Let's be real.
Yeah.
Throwing out the first pitch at Wrigley Field and singing the seventh inning stretch and doing mm-hmm. that whole deal. Like, he's really, he's ingratiated himself with people in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And they love him right back.
Well, because he's a Chicago, I mean, suburban kid, but
right.
Chicago area.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah. So I have two points to relate to that. Speaking of like the emotion of the feel of the city, I can actually remember after the Sweet 16 win, so after we beat Nevada, I was at world famous Bar 63, a good name. You know, I think that they had a good thing going there. But I think we just took that name and made it a little better with Podcast 63. Neither here nor there. I was at Bar 63. We defeated Nevada. Very emotional game. Came down to the end. Marcus Towns, huge three-pointer in the corner. You all remember. But after I left the very sweaty and loud Bar 63 and I went out on the street, it was similar to when the Cubs won the World Series. People were out yelling, go Rams, just general kind of chaos. And I'm sure that was kind of sequestered to Rogers Park to an extent of, like, I'm sure it wasn't the whole city like the Cubs winning the World Series was. But I was, like, kind of in that moment. That was my first thought. I was like, oh, my gosh, this is bringing me back to Cubs winning the World Series. Mm-hmm. And that's a fun feeling. And it's super cool that we as a fan base got to experience that. And, you know, there's nothing that a DePaul 9-0 start can take away from that.
You are so salty.
My other point was talking about Porter Moser. I think, obviously, but correct me if I'm wrong, in the eye of Chicago sport or Chicago news or even national news, when you think Loyola, the first thing you think of has to be, well, Final Four run maybe, but Sister Jean.
Yes.
And then is second Porter Moser? Like, has he made himself that big of a...
I think so.
A citywide...
Well, I think figure? I think so, and I think the added attention following the Final Four run and the courting by St. John didn't hurt.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he became a well-known figure in the city in the way that, you know, Dave Leto maybe at DePaul is not, or the coach at UIC, for instance.
Yeah.
I mean, people know Chris Collins at Northwestern because, right, of course, his dad was so...
And because they have a horrible basketball team.
Well...
I said it.
Okay.
You didn't. Yeah. You can be impartial.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. I'm curious, it's just kind of got my mind going, who of the Final Four run of that team, or I guess any basketball player, but like who, when you think of like basketball players on Loyola from a Chicago news outlet, news media, whatever perspective, which of the shots or which of the games is like the most memorable? Is it Dante Ingram hitting the three-pointer at the buzzer against,
yes,
Miami?
Completely.
So over the Clayton Custer shot against
Completely,
Tennessee,
yes.
Over the Marcus Towns shot at Nevada. Or I think Ben Richardson scoring 26 points against Kansas.
No. That three, that three at the buzzer.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Okay. I mean,
huge.
I mean, just because.
Exciting.
And it was, I think.
And all of those games were exciting.
They were, oh, for sure. Yeah. Just for different reasons. And it was cool to see different players do it in different ways. But I was just kind of curious. That was just one that kind of came to my mind. Cool. Well, I want to, shift gears a little bit, but. Recently, and for a few years now, there's been discussion of, you know, teams not playing Loyola, whether it's DePaul, teams from Chicago, whether it's DePaul, the team that's not in Chicago, Northwestern. USC has played us a bunch of times, so good job, USC. But those two teams, I guess, in particular, because they are in higher conferences than Loyola, more prestigious conferences. But I think something that is more relevant, more manageable, and honestly would be a lot more fun would be to have a Chicago college basketball tournament at the start of the season. You know, you could have Loyola, UIC, Northwestern, DePaul, Chicago State. I know I'm missing one.
NIU.
NIU, yeah, they're close by. You could even make it a whole Illinois thing. You could add Bradley, SIU, SIUE, you know, there's, I'm sure, I'm sorry if I'm Illinois State, I guess. You know, there's other teams in Illinois, but I think the most reasonable one would be Chicago, mm-hmm. Would be Chicago and Evanston. What kind of impact do you think a Chicago 4-team, 6-team tournament would have on the city of a whole? And what would be a realistic venue for that to be played at? Because I don't think Gentile Arena would be the most realistic venue for that, because I think it would be big enough where it would be, it would sell out there. You know, there's only just under 5,000 seats at Gentile. So what would that impact? First of all, I guess. First of all, what would the impact of a Chicago tournament have on the city of Chicago, and kind of maybe even bigger if it would?
Well, in a city where pro sports kind of drive the bus, mm-hmm. And the city, you know, has a collective meltdown every time a kicker fails to make an extra point at Soldier Field, which is sort of a lot. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a great way to kind of reinforce that there are other good sports in the city and in the area. It would be an excellent recruiting tool as well mm-hmm. for a lot of these coaches.
Yeah, now you're barking up my tree.
Yeah, right.
That's like my favorite thing to talk
so,
about.
So I think it would do great things in terms of raising the visibility of college programs and would get fan bases fired up at a good fun event that would bring visitors into the city, which I think is what everybody wants. In terms of venue, I mean, the city did partially pay for Wintrust.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be the perfect one.
Yeah.
There's plenty of hotels around there. There's a growing number of restaurants there up Michigan Avenue, up 23rd, 24th Street. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff that's around there, and there's more every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to get to in transit. There's now an elevated stop that's like right there, right at McCormick Place. So it's very easy to get to now for all of the fan bases from all of the campuses. So I think that's kind of and it's also a brand new location. So
yeah.
I think that's kind of the perfect venue.
Mm, no, I agree. I think it would be super cool. And I think at one point or another, all the head coaches of the Chicago teams have talked about how they want to keep all the good high school talent in the city of Chicago.
They should.
And I think, you know, if you start an event like that, I think you start something that has a big impact for the future as well. It might not pay off right away, but you get those freshmen, those sophomores in high school seeing, oh, wow, Chicago basketball is something to be proud of. Chicago basketball is something to be impressed by. And you know, start that rivalry. Because right now, I really don't think there's any rivalry between any of the Chicago college basketball teams. I mean, we have this, like, me, Podcast 63, and me and Buck and Lou. I said me and Buck and Lou, but y'all know what I mean. Talk smack to the other Chicago teams and the team up in Evanston. And so it's kind of like a joking, playful. I mean, I'm serious about it. I want to play them. But it would be so much more fun to have a real rivalry where it's the Cubs and the Sox. It's, you know, like something like that where these teams, they might hate each other for 24 hours during the game. But then they also go on to cheer for them if, you know, if DePaul continues this run or if Northwestern makes it to another tournament. You know, other Chicago teams can support their fellow Chicago comrades because there is that, like, that garnered respect then for all of the teams. Because right now, I don't respect those teams. I don't respect those programs because they are too afraid or too money hungry to play us. And it's really a shame because I want to be able to support a Chicago-based team if Loyola has a bad year, if Loyola doesn't make it to a tournament. But right now, I mean, the only one I respect is UIC because they're playing us. They have in the past multiple times. So it's just kind of a shame. I think that because of a bigger ego, because of teams with a bigger ego in Chicago, they're missing out on a rivalry, financial, benefits to having a big event like that, alumni coming back to the games, having a renewed sense of pride in your university, and also the added benefit of potentially having more Chicago-based students come and play for your program. So I don't, you know, I maybe someday.
Yeah,
maybe. There's always hope.
I think if a sponsor or two.
Mm-hmm.
were to throw some money on the table and be like...
Podcast 63, really, I've heard that they want to sponsor this tournament.
Yeah, that would be
interesting. I can scrounge up 83 cents.
Well...
63 cents.
Well, you might get the UIC Forum for that kind of money.
I think so.
But I think if there was like a State Farm, which is such a big supporter of college sports, or Allstate, or somebody like that, were to say, you know what, let's do the Battle of Chicago, let's do whatever, and have all four teams. I think, and if, you know, each team was to get a certain amount of money, I think it would be difficult for those programs to turn it down, regardless of whatever other concerns they may have about, oh, we don't want to play Loyola because they're too good, or we don't want to play Loyola because they're not in our conference, or whatever. I think if it's presented, if a sponsor, a name sponsor can be found to, and a promoter can be found to be like, here, everybody's going to get some money, everybody's going to get some exposure, it's going to be a good thing all around. Let's see if we can make this happen. I think it's hard to turn down.
Yeah. So all of you fans who have, you know, big checkbooks, or work the CEO of State Farm, contact me, and then we'll get it going ourselves. We'll get a venue. We'll pay for it cash, cold hard cash, and we'll get this tournament going. Thank you for your insight on those issues or, you know, topics. I think it's really cool. I think it's something that's on a lot of fans' minds right now, considering the hot start for DePaul, considering Northwestern's struggles in past years, and Loyola's, you know, back-to-back championships, and being the one team up until this point in the city the past 2 years who have had winning records. So I think we will talk a little bit about the game, because you and I went to the game.
Yep.
I'll talk a little bit about Ball State. It won't be too super in-depth. You'll get that content when Lou decides to return. He's still stuck up in the rafters, and we can't get him down. Call 911. They're on their way. But, go to break here. So do not forget, and always remember, go Blairs. And Lou, how are you feeling? Are you doing good? Wait, you're not Lou. Who are you?
Oh, hi. My name is Jeff.
Who are you?
At Jeff News. GEOFFNEWS.
You're not Lou. And we're back. So this past week, our Ramblers played two basketball games. Coming off their win in the final game of the Cayman Islands tournament, where they defeated Old Dominion, they returned to the mainland and went to good old Muncie, Indiana, which I'm sure is just joyous at this time of year, quite like the Cayman Islands. But they went into Muncie to play the Ball State. I think they're the Cardinals.
They are the Cardinals.
And it was a challenging game. Or at least I expected it to be. They were both very similarly ranked in a few of the different ranking systems I follow, such as KenPom and Hazelmetrics. They were like pretty much neck and neck. Loyola had a little bit of an edge. I think in one of the rankings I saw, Loyola was like 118 and Ball State was 120. So a very close contest. I think Ball State was actually favored to win this game, considering they were playing on their home court. But not to worry, Loyola went into Muncie and defeated the Cardinals 70-58. They had an impressive 31-18 lead at halftime. Love to see holding them to only 18 points in the first half. And then it was a bit of a high-scoring second half, but Loyola prevailed, and they were up by like 23 with 8 or 10 minutes left in the game. So it wasn't as close as the score indicated. But impressive games across the board for a few different players. Our leading scorers were both Cam Krutwig and Tate Hall. They finished with 14 points apiece. Cam had 9 rebounds and 4 assists. Tate had 6 rebounds and 5 assists, so a good all-around game for them. Cam also had 3 steals and a block, and Tate recorded a steal of his own. Along with those players, Lucas had a very good first half. I think he scored all 10 of his points in the first half to go along with 3 rebounds, an assist, and 2 steals. It was also the debut of Keith Clemens, who scored 13 points and had 7 free throws, which is good to see. He had 3 assists and also hit 2 three-point shots. So good debut for Keith, probably as best as I could have hoped. I didn't really know what to expect, and it was really exciting to hear him play and just kind of get back in the thick of things. And there was no ramp up for him at all. He played 34 minutes, tied with Lucas Williamson for the most on the team, which is really impressive to see coming off a significant knee injury. Some other stat lines to notice. Ahir Ugwuok played 19 minutes. He finished with 5 points, 2 rebounds, and 1 assist. Still, he actually hit a 3-point shot, which is kind of interesting. But still hoping to see more out of him. Jalen Pipkins had a good game. He stepped up after Marquise Kennedy in the second half. I think he took an arm or an elbow to the face. So Pipkins had to step up. He played 19 minutes as well. He finished with 7 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal. Really good for him to get significant minutes. He played very well and stepped up in a big game. I mean, this is a game where you either, you know, they were coming in 4-4. They could either go above or below 500. So it was really cool to see him play well in a significant game. And for him to produce, I'm really looking forward to seeing him continue to grow in whatever role he has on the team. The last stat line of note, Marquise Kennedy finished with 5 points, 1 rebound, 1 assist, and a steal. He did only play 14 minutes because of that aforementioned hand or elbow to the face. But everyone else, Frank had 7 minutes, Paxson had 7, and then Tom and Bruno each saw the court for just a minute. But I'm going to wait to kind of dive in depth, and we can talk about the ramifications, the ramblerfications of this game.
Yeah, I see what you did there.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. But it was a good game. It was really fun to listen to. I think it'll be a big, it could be a turning point of our season, honestly, to get Keith back like that, have him play in such a good way, have some guys step up that usually don't have the opportunity, like Jalen Pipkins. And just solid minutes all around. Lucas had a good first half. And as we saw today, which we'll talk about, it carried over into this game, into the game on Saturday against Quincy. But no, a good game, one that we can definitely build on. And it was good to get a road victory, a true road victory. Especially after Ball State came into Gentile Arena last year and beat us. So now we're going to talk about the Quincy game, which, Jeff, you attended.
Yes.
And it is your second basketball game this year.
That is correct. My second basketball game, my second Loyola basketball game where I saw a team named the Hawks.
Oh, which other game did you attend?
Well, whichever one that was. What was
St. Joe's?
St. Joe, yeah. Yeah.
The guy, the mascot.
The guy who would not stop flapping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Fortunately for us, Quincy did not have a mascot, and nor did any of their players flap their arms.
No.
But they definitely looked like a bird flapping their arms because they lost by so much. Wow, that, I really was trying to make that work. What I'm trying to say is Loyola won 90-59, the highest scoring game of the season. Quincy is a Division II school, which me and Lou have talked about before, about we really don't like playing Division II teams. Not that we don't think that they deserve a shot or a chance, but it's just, I don't think it's very developmentally helpful for the team to play a team like this. But there were some really good things to come out of this game. Jeff, I almost said Lou because I'm so used to my co-host. Lou, I miss you. Jeff. No, don't make it cute. No.
Okay.
All right, he'll be embarrassed.
Fine.
Jeff, why don't you kick this one off? What did you like from this game? I know you're not a super basketball fan, but coming from just like a casual fan standpoint, what were some things you saw in this game that got you excited or just you thought of note about this basketball game?
Having listened to enough of the podcast, I know that I think you and Lou have been a little bit confused/disappointed about the lack of consistent production from Lucas Williamson.
Yes, we have.
And so to see him come out, and I think, you know, racked off, what, 4, 5, 6, 7 3-point shots in a row, it felt like, in that first half.
He was 7 of 8.
Yeah, it was crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, it was, and after hearing you guys talk and talking to you personally about how frustrating it was to not have him taking shots or not have him taking good shots, to see him come out and make a statement like that at the beginning of the game, I thought was remarkable. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really great. It was good to see Cam. I thought he was a little more physical than I've seen him be before. Mm-hmm.
I think he kind of just had a bigger body than anyone in that game, and he really made that presence known.
Yeah, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I was thinking, you know, when you go to a Cubs game and one of the players, like Chris Bryant, hits two or three home runs in a game, people start calling it, oh, that's the Chris Bryant game.
Right.
You know, I wonder if when you and Lou look back at the season, if this is going to be the Lucas Williamson game.
It definitely was the Lucas Williamson half. That's for sure.
Because didn't he set a career high?
He did. He set his career high of 25 points, and he scored 24 of those 25 points in the first half.
Yeah.
So it was very much – I think that's a good point. I didn't think of it that way, but I definitely think this was the Lucas Williamson game. Although he did have a game earlier in the season where he scored 22 points, I believe against IUPUI. Yeah, where he scored 22 points, and he also had 4 3-pointers. And then he kind of fell short for the tournament in the Cayman Islands. So I do think there's validity to that the Lucas Williamson game. I'm just hoping that it carries over and he continues. He probably won't have another game like this where he makes 7 of 8 3-pointers. That's crazy. But I do think he is on pace for hopefully scoring a few more 20-point games. I think that's definitely within his capabilities.
I think Loyola needs that if they're going to go as deep and be as good as
I think so.
Fans would like them to be.
I think so. I think you're right. But yeah, so Lucas did finish with 25 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, and a blocked shot. But also of note, Cam Krutwig did have 18 points, 8 rebounds, and an assist. And
he didn't have a double-double this
time? He did not have a double-double. Oh. I think he's only had 2 this year. He's been really close, but I just think that because the game got out of hand later in the second half, he wasn't playing as much. I think if he would have played his normal amount of minutes, he probably would have secured a couple more rebounds.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, no, I think he had a good game. For as well of a first half as Lucas played, I think Cam had a very impressive second half. Mm-hmm. I think he at least scored 10 points, if not 12.
Yeah, he was really good in traffic. He was really good with that kind of floaty
hook shot.
Yeah, that seemed to fall really well for him this time around. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. He had a good game as well. And then next leading scorer, Marquise Kennedy. He finished with 11 points, 3 assists, and 3 steals, and a couple dunks, and a couple nice and one finishes. Mm-hmm. He had a really good day. He did have a turnover, but I was impressed with Marquise Kennedy. I always impressed with Marquise Kennedy. He's such a fun player to watch, and I hope that he's a fun player to watch for the next 4 years of his career. Additionally, it was the first time I saw Keith Clemens play, and I was impressed. I think he looks super calm and collected always. He did have a few turnovers, but a few of them weren't his fault. But kind of what me and Lou have been talking about a little bit, about how when Keith Clemens came back, that we thought that Cameron's turnovers would go down, mm-hmm. and they did. Cam only had 1 turnover in this game, and I think that just kind of alludes to the point of that Cam just had the ball so much. He had the ball in his hands so much that he was just creating turnovers himself, that he's not used to having the ball that much. Other players of note, Ahir finished with 6 points, 7 rebounds, and 6 assists. Kind of quietly a good game, just an all-around good game from him. But that's kind of what he should do against teams. He was by far the most athletic player on the court at all times. No one came close on the other team to how athletic he was. I wish he would have scored a little bit more, but sometimes those opportunities aren't there. And when those opportunities to score aren't there, it's really good to see him have 7 rebounds and 6 assists. He had and a couple of his passes were really fancy, and they weren't just like kind of gimme passes for layups. Like, he was finding guys through traffic, and I think he did. I think he had a good game. Hopefully something to build off of that for him. And hopefully in the next game he has a better free throw shooting day, because he was only 2 of 5. Additionally, Tate Hall was shut out in the first half, but did come back and score 8 points in the second half. And then it seemed like the whole bench got in on the action at the end of the game. Some of the other lines of note, Paxton had 5 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. Bruno did end up scoring 4 points. I know we have a lot of Bruno fans that listen to the podcast, so it was good to see Bruno. And Tom Welch actually got a significant amount of minutes. He only finished with 3 points, a rebound, and a steal, but I was actually thinking to myself during the game that it was really good to see him get a lot of play time, and I think that I'm hoping that he gets more of his freshman mistakes out, because he did have a couple where he got caught traveling, and I'm just hoping that that kind of jumpstarts him a little bit. Frank also got significant minutes. He had 2 points and 4 rebounds, and everyone else got in on the action. It was a fun game. Jeff, did you have fun at the game?
Oh, very much so.
Yeah. Any other things that you noticed from the game that you liked or that maybe you didn't like? Or
I thought that Quincy did what it could against a team with whom they were completely outmatched. I mean, I noticed, and I think I remarked at one point during the game, during the second half, that Quincy was far more aggressive defensively in the second half than in the first half. I noticed going into the locker room at the half that Loyola had not, or Quincy had not been to the free throw line at all in that first half, which I thought was unusual for a basketball game.
For sure, yeah.
And I think they may have been intimidated by the fact that the Ramblers were larger physically.
Yeah.
And certainly more imposing physically. I mean, you know, we talk about Cam. You guys talk about Cam being so imposing. But Ugwak's a huge guy.
Yeah.
And that can certainly be imposing. And I don't know what happened in the locker room between the first half and the second half of the game. But they certainly came out. And in fact, I think Quincy wound up in bonus before Loyola did in the second half. Yeah. So clearly they got the message that the only way they were going to make any kind of a showing in this game was if they really started to take it to the Ramblers and be more aggressive in drawing fouls. And in fact, that worked, although the final score, if you look at the final score, I don't know that the rate of scoring slowed down at all. I think the margin was about what we figured it would be.
Yeah.
But they certainly made an adjustment at halftime, and I think did what they could to try to make it a game. But the fact is that, you know, the Ramblers are so large and have now at this point so much experience playing other better teams that it was, it was kind of over before it started.
Yeah, it was. It was good to have a game like that, especially for my own sanity. It was fun. They jumped out to a 10-0 lead or something really quickly.
And yes.
That was really exciting to see. That was kind of the only way that I saw that this would be a close game is if they didn't get off to a quick start. Mm-hmm. And that was quickly stomped. And they did, in fact, get off to a quick start. And they never looked back. I think that's going to do it talking about that game. The final score was 90-59. Loyola moved to 6-4 on the season. They have a little bit of a break. The next game they play is the 15th, where they will be taking on Norfolk State at home. Game's at 1 p.m. on a Sunday. But considering you are the news guy, Jeff, you pointed out to me that you had a news story to share. Would you like to just share that with us?
Yeah, I don't want to bring the room down or anything.
No,
but the only reason I bring this up is because the Loyola men's basketball team before the game today tweeted this out, and I wanted you guys are so good about mentioning people in the Ramblers basketball universe. And I wanted to mention this since I knew I was going to be joining you on the podcast today. And it's someone that is actually kind of critical to the preserving the history of Loyola basketball, but nobody really knows who he is. Guy's name is Bud Bertog. He's a military veteran. For 35 years, he was the chief photographer for the Chicago Park District. And for 6 decades, according to Loyola, was a photographer for the athletic department at Loyola University, and shot a number of games for the school over the years. There was a profile a few years ago in DNA Info here in Chicago, where one of the reporters talked to him about his, at that time it was 2012, and he'd been, I think he was, I forget how old he was, he was in his 70s and he was still shooting Rambler basketball games, and notes that he missed the 1963 game, the championship game, because he was planning his wedding.
Oh.
And he made a comment about how his wife, his wife said, oh, he was really upset about that for a while.
I missed that game too.
Yes, well, most of us did. And I bring him up.
To get Lou down from the rafters again.
Yeah, I bring up Mr. Bertog. Bud Bertog was his name, Frank Bertog. He died over the weekend at the age of 81 years old. He will, by the time this podcast airs, he will have been interred in a cemetery here in Chicago with full military honors as an Army veteran, and still with his beloved wife Sandy, who when he was not able to shoot Rambler basketball games, she would shoot them for him.
No way.
Wait.
Huh.
So anyway, a salute to Mr. Bertog and for his service to not only our country, but also to Loyola basketball, and a guy who helped preserve a lot of great images from. So if you've seen, as you go into Gentile Arena and you see a lot of old timey pictures of Rambler basketball, it's likely that Bud shot them.
Wow.
So something to think about the next time you go into a game or watch a game on the television.
No, the more you know. That's super cool.
Yeah.
And I can't thank him enough for his service, and B, for his service to our great university. I think that's a super cool thing, and I'm kind of actually surprised they didn't have any sort of like mention of him at the game.
That is a little surprising, because the university did tweet something out, and then the men's basketball team retweeted it and noted that he had been shooting for Loyola basketball for six decades,
That decades. Was today, though, right?
Yeah.
Maybe they'll have something for him at the next game.
Possibly.
I mean, it was just kind of too soon to put anything together.
That could be, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you for sharing that. Yeah. I was on the Twitters, and I found another piece of news. So we were talking about it at the game. We saw a picture. Alumni and famous Loyola Rambler, Clayton Custer, was at the game. Not surprising. Surprising part is he was sitting on the basketball team's bench, which, okay, you know, also not too surprising, but he was wearing a suit, and that's not a usual thing for just a casual fan. He's been to games before in sweats and jeans, whatever. So we were trying to figure out what was going on there. And so just recently, just right after the game, one of the Phoenix reporters, Abby Schnabel, tweeted that Clayton Custer is officially a part of Porter Moser's staff.
What?
As the coordinator of player performance. Which is super cool.
Is that a vacant position?
Well, it was a position before.
But now it is.
So, yeah, I don't really... I mean, I'm sure we'll kind of find out a little bit more as the week goes on.
So what do you think the benefit to the team will be of having Clay back on the bench?
So we've talked about... on the podcast, one of the things we think we're really missing on the staff is someone to manage the guards. And who better than a Larry Bird Trophy winner, a Final Four participant, and back-to-back Missouri Valley Conference champion than who better than Clayton Custer?
Sure.
So I don't know entirely what to make of it yet. I'll have to do a little bit more research and kind of think about it a lot more, but I think it's super cool. I know a lot of the guys that played with him, such as Lucas and Cam, and even, you know, Uguak and I guess Bruno. So those guys who have played with him, they all stay in touch. And, you know, over the summer, they're having workouts with each other. They're scrimmaging against each other. So I don't think Clay was ever too far from the team, too far removed from the team. And I think if nothing else, it's just going to be a little bit of an ego boost, or not ego, morale booster for the team. And someone who knows the game, and he's technical, and he, you know, was good enough to be the best player on a team that went to the Final Four. So really excited for that. I'm sure Lou will have a lot to say about that. I can't imagine what he'll say, but it will be something with a New York accent.
Will he be happy about it?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I hope so. I guess we'll have to find out. Yeah. We'll find out together on the next episode of the podcast.
Hey, Clay, by the way, if you're listening, hit this one up at Podcast 63. Oh. I know the boys would love to talk to you.
That would be super cool. Thank you. You should be our media relations.
I would love nothing more.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. Because, there's a few people we would love to have on the podcast. And, you know, Clay would be one of them. Anyone that's been on the team or is close to the team would be super cool. But, So that concludes this podcast. First of all, Jeff,
round of applause. Thank you.
Excellent. Really appreciate your expertise. Where can the fine Podcast 63 listeners find you?
They can find me on Twitter at Jeff News, GEOFFNEWS. And you can hear anchors read my name every day at 5:40 p.m. on WBBM News Radio. That's at WBBM News Radio on Twitter. And WBBMNewsRadio.com.
What kind of content can people expect to see from you? Because you're not gonna see like a lot of like rambler stuff.
I know it's gonna be. I usually use Twitter to retweet or amplify news stories that we're covering. There will occasionally be jokey back and forths with other Chicago reporters.
Will there be dog memes?
There will be retweeting of dog memes, in particular dog rates.
Yeah,
A-plus yes.
account.
And car stuff probably too. But that's kind of what you'll find.
What's your favorite car?
Oh, we don't have enough time. We don't have enough time.
Well, that'll do it from us at Podcast 63. Thank you all for listening. Like I said before, the next game is going to be on the 15th. Next podcast should be dropping probably middle of the week this week. I think me and Lou are going to be recording earlier, probably on a Monday or Tuesday this week. So look for that probably on Wednesday, maybe Thursday, but we'll keep you updated if anything changes. But thank you all so much for listening to another episode of Podcast 63. And please always remember and never forget, go Blurs.